This is Robin Youngs on behalf of the Dialect and Heritage Project. I'm at the Dales Countryside Museum in Hawes, Yorkshire. Can I ask you to introduce yourself?
Hello, yes, I'm Mary Bishop Hunt, and I'm here because in 1957 my granddad took part in one of the original recordings.
Okay, and where and when were you born?
I was born on April the 27th, 1956. My parents lived on Mendlesham Green, but I was actually born in Ipswich Hospital.
So you mentioned Mendlesham Green. Is that where you grew up?
Yes, it is. Yes, my parental home was built on a meadow that was gifted by my grandparents to my father, who was their only remaining son. An older son had been killed in World War II, so my father was actually the baby of his generation, but he was gifted a small piece of meadow, and Mum and Dad built their first home there when they married in 1953, and apparently spent months, if not years, picking stones and clearing up the meadow and making it into a beautiful garden with a little bungalow perched in the middle of it, as was the norm in those days.
Where do you live now?
Well, at the moment, I live with my husband in North Yorkshire, on the outskirts of Beedale in Ayscue, and we've been there about 4.5 years.
Okay. And where did you go to school?
I went to school, actually, I started off in Stowmarket at Hillcroft Preparatory School. Both my parents had attended the village school, but my understanding is that at the time it wasn't going through a very good patch, so they made big efforts to send me to the little prep school in Stowmarket. And from then I went on to Stowmarket Grammar School, which later became Stowmarket High School after it went comprehensive in my O-level year. And then when I left there, I went to train to be a primary school teacher at Keswick Hall College of Education in Norwich, and I did a 4-year BEd degree course there.
What's your earliest memory?
Well, probably because Mendlesham Green was quite small, and as my mum used to tell me a lot, when I was born, there were only 5 or 6 children of school age in the whole village. So playing with cousins was very important, and because both my parents were from large families, I do have, still have a lot of cousins, so families were very important. So a lot of my earliest memories are sort of high days and holidays, and very often the family would all gather, and my parents were great entertainers and would love to get both sides of the families together, and they were both very good cooks, so we had huge family parties at ours, and so they're a lot of my earliest memories. Yes.
Can you remember some of the games that you played?
Well, yes, we did. I mean, we were all quite a musical family, so we'd often improvise, and there would often be, you know, pianists would take turns, and we'd do a lot of singing. So if it was Christmas, yes, obviously carols and things like that, or if not, sort of old musical songs. And then somebody would say, well, let's have a bit of percussion. And so somebody would run to the kitchen and get saucepans and spoons and things to shake and rattle. So we did sort of things like that. And another old game, which may be of interest, which I know came from the Hunt children played when they were little, was a game called Ring on a String. So we'd all sit in a circle with just a piece of string around us, to which somebody would attach their wedding ring, and we'd have to pretend by making fists that we had got the ring in our hand, and pretend with very elaborate ruses to sort of pass it on to the next person. And we'd sing a funny little song that went a bit like this: The ring on the string keeps moving, the ring on the string keeps moving, the ring on the string keeps moving, we'll all be merry and bright. And then some poor innocent in the middle would have to try and guess who got the ring. And of course, we've got this down to a fine art, so we'd make sort of big effort to pretend that we were passing the ring on, and but so nobody really did know where it was, but just silly little games like that, you know. But
and playing games with other children in the village, what type of things would you have done then? Any memories of that?
Not an awful lot. I did sort of, not as a very young child, but sort of growing up a bit, I used to go down and play with Judy at the farm, and with Lindsay, I used to sort of do, I suppose we'd perhaps go down onto the playing field and just go on the swings and the slides and the roundabout, that sort of thing. But I can't really sort of think too much else, really. Just playing on what was there.
Yeah.
Or probably just poking around muddy ditches and puddles, as country children did,
yes,
you know.
Yes.
Doesn't sound very much, but we were never bored.
No.
Never bored, no.
And where did your parents grow up?
They're both from Mendlesham families. My mother's family were called the Thorpe family, and they were small farmers at Dentist Hill Farm in Mendlesham. Well, just out of Mendlesham, sort of halfway between Mendlesham and Mendlesham Green. So that's where my mother grew up, and my father grew up at Woods Farm on Mendlesham Green. They both were born in the same year, 1921, so were at school together, and ironically they were both the youngest of large families. So both families knew each other well, because the older siblings had also gone to school, you know, in the preceding years. So, yeah.
And where have you lived during your life?
Well, all my life I've lived on Mendlesham Green, apart from when we first got married. We lived for a year in Stowmarket, but my father had died just before we married, and Mum had stayed on at the family home, and then she decided that the garden, and it was all a bit too much for her, so she decided to move into Mendlesham Village proper, not Mendlesham Green. And before she put the house on the market, she asked us if we would like to take it over. So we transferred our mortgage and bought my childhood home. So really, I suppose until I was sort of 55, I really can't really say I lived anything apart from further education, you know. But my husband had become ill, and we had spent nearly all our holidays in Scotland, and specifically the Western Isles, the Outer Hebrides, and it was always our wish to go and retire there. Well, with Graham being poorly, we decided that maybe we shouldn't wait until retirement years, because obviously nothing is guaranteed. So rather, I don't know if it was a stupid decision or bold or what, but we decided we would relocate up to the Western Isles. And so Graham had already had to give up teaching, and I gave up my job, and Mum had recently come to live with us because she had acquired a hospital infection, and she was by then 89 and couldn't manage to live on her own anymore. Our daughter was away at university, and so we went to live in a large schoolhouse on the tiny island of Barra. And I, as I say, had given up teaching and just transferred those skills and ran a bed and breakfast and self-catering business. And Graham was very good. He did front of house while I cooked the breakfast. But we had a wonderful time, and one thing that we found very interesting up there, that a lot of people do multitask and have several jobs. And so as well as that, Graham did some examining with SQA at the local school, and I went to the Learning Centre to learn Gaelic, because I've always been interested in languages. And after a few weeks, the administrator there asked me if I'd like a part-time job helping her out. So that was especially handy in the winter when we closed at the end of the summer season. So we had 8 seasons doing that, and then Graham had become poorly again, so we thought we'd do the sensible thing and move back nearer our daughter. So here we are in North Yorkshire.
And do you go back to Suffolk much?
Yes, my husband's family are still very much there. 2 brothers and his mother are still alive. And I have several cousins still in Suffolk. So even when we were in Scotland, we used to go back 2 or 3 times a year. But now we go back 6, 8, 12, a dozen times. Just whenever, really. It's only just down the A1. So life is a bit more easier in that respect. Yeah.
And have you noticed any changes in Suffolk over the years?
Huge.
Yeah,
huge.
Like what?
Well, because of the growth of the Port of Felixstowe, which I remember as a small child, my uncle had a haulage firm, and I remember being told one day that Uncle George's lorries were going to start filling in the river at Felixstowe. So from a very early age, I remember, we'd go down and see the progress as more bits were filled in and the port expanded. And so really what was the A45 and is now the A14, all the little villages and towns in that corridor have now grown beyond all recognition. Mm-hmm. And a lot of, as the population has become more mobile, and the train, I mean, it's an electric line now from Norwich to Liverpool Street, so we're very easily in, I'm saying as if I lived there, still very much in London commuter belt, so great influx, but then also opportunity for people to travel much more than ever in my parents' or grandparents' time.
Yes, it's certainly easier to come up to this part of the world now than it was,
yes,
wasn't it?
That's right. I mean, my father was 18 when the Second World War broke out, and he volunteered to go into the Air Force because, by his own admission, he was scared stiff of submarines, so he didn't want to be press gang into the Navy or whatever. And to think that he was sent to airfields in Lincolnshire, it was Bomber Command, so Lincolnshire, which must have seemed at the end of the world to a lad who really hadn't left the village much. And the same for Grandad. I know he would take the cart into Stowmarket to the market. And, I mean, that was probably a whole day's expedition then.
Mm. Yeah. So you mentioned that while you were in Bower, you ran the guest house and did other things there. Before you moved up to Scotland, you were in teaching.
Yes,
were you?
Yes.
Where
yes.
was that?
Always in Ipswich, actually. I was a primary teacher with responsibility for music. So I taught at 2 primary schools in Ipswich and a few years at St Joseph's Prep School at Oak Hill, and a short spell of time with Suffolk County Council as a peripatetic classroom music teacher, but always in Suffolk, yeah.
Any particular instruments that you specialised in?
Well, not really, just all the classroom ones, really. Mm. Piano is probably the main instrument, but I'm not a very gifted musician technically. I've always been a lazy musician in that I'm lucky in that I'm able to harmonise very naturally. So it's made me a lazy musician in that my sight reading is terrible because I only have to look at the right hand and my left hand would seem to know what to do to fill it in. So it's been a wonderful help in that, at school somebody might say, oh, can you just play so-and-so? And I do play a lot by ear as well. So I'm sure that's what's always kept me in a job, although technically I'm not not very qualified at all in actual music.
So when you were at school in Stowmarket, did you take up music then?
Yes, I think, my parents were Obviously, they didn't have the opportunities that I had, but they both played the piano a little and enjoyed singing, whether church choirs or socially choral singing. So there's always been music in the house, and I was always very much encouraged. They never had money to spare for frivolous sort of music. There was always money for my lessons and the books that I needed, but if I wanted any sort of pop music or anything at all like that, I had to work that out by ear. So I think that's why I'm good at doing that now. Yeah. That's been it's been quite a help, really.
So you mentioned that at the beginning that you were related to Johan, who was one of the original informants for the project in 1957, and that he was your grandfather. Can you tell us your memories of your grandfather?
Yes, obviously they're not very many, because I was about six, I think, when he died. But I do remember after he and Granny left the farm, they went into a little bungalow, much the same as ours, and that was only sort of 100 yards up the road, so that we were often there, either obviously with my parents, and latterly, of course, as I grew up, I could walk around by myself. But at this time, I do remember sitting on Grandad's knee and sort of his old whiskers, you know, and things like that, which would fascinate a young child. And he must have been a pipe smoker, because I do remember sort of bits and bobs of pipes and tobacco and things like that about. And I remember he didn't seem to sort of have sweeties as such to give me, but he would sort of break up a Victory V cough sweet into quarters and give me a quarter of that, which is a vivid memory, and I still like them today. And I remember a little song that he used to bounce me up on his knee about. Do you want me to sing it?
Yes, of course.
They're like all folk songs. There'll be different versions, but roughly, rumpety bumpety bumpety bump, as if I were riding my charger. Rumpety bumpety bumpety bump, as proud as an Indian Raja. All the girls declare that I'm a gay old stager. Hey ho, clear the way, here comes the galloping major. And he'd bounce me up and down on his knee to be the horse. Yeah. Mm. So that's really sort of that's a specific thing that I remember. And but always that he was very kind and loving, but as I say, it was just so long ago, I don't have really much more to offer, no.
Going on to the natural world, do you think the weather has changed over the years during your life?
Immensely. Mm. In fact, we found it just in our sort of 8-9 years on Barra that things had become a lot more extreme. We had far more violent storms. Gusts of winds were often in excess of 100 miles an hour. Mm. And, storm-wise, I think it has changed a lot. But, and I'm sure, as all figures would suggest, that we are in a period of climate warming. And yet, as a child, all the summer holidays always seemed to be lovely and sunny.
Yes. Mm.
I just remember having the privilege of having a very large garden and always being out in it. And of course it wasn't like that. It must have rained buckets at times.
Yes.
And I remember, of course, the winters as well, Mum having she shared school runs with other people in the area, and driving to Stowmarket from Mendlesham Green in the winter of 66? Yes, I think it was the bad winter. And the snowdrifts were piled either side of the road. I mean, we've never seen anything like that really since, I think. Maybe perhaps in the early 70s there was one. Yes, because I was working in Ipswich then, and I know couldn't get home, so I had to stay with an auntie in Ipswich because Mendlesham was cut off. But, I mean, that's just, you know, that sort of extreme of cold really hasn't seemed to have happened so much, I think. But then, of course, we had the high wind in 1987, and Graham and I had just moved back to Mendlesham Green then, so we had quite a lot of damage with trees from the old Woods farm had blown onto our garden. But yes, I think the weather, yes, I can cite examples of it being a bit more extreme now. But I can also think of things when I was younger when it was extreme. Yes. So is that conclusive evidence? I don't know.
Well, I think it's probably, we all have that same experience, really. But with you living on Bower, you would have been exposed to the Atlantic in a big way.
Well, of course, it really did affect the way of life because everything was brought in by ferry.
Yeah.
So it really affected how you shopped, what there was in the shop. And, you know, it's a bit of a, when you're not used to it, coming in and seeing empty shelves when we're just not used to that really on the mainland. But it was a wonderful experience and a huge privilege to live and get to know people of a totally different culture.
Within your family now, do you have any traditions that you keep up?
Well, probably not quite so much now because like my parents, I'm the youngest of my generation, so my oldest cousins are 94 on my mother's side and 89 on my father's side. So we've sort of gone our separate ways and, you know, generations have succeeded. So when we do get together, which we do, we are quite close family, especially on the Hunt side, I would say is more close now. And we do get together and have family dues. But it's always reminiscing. And invariably, it's my cousins say, we remember coming to yours for Christmases and things. And so it really is lovely that they, you know, they're kind enough to bring those things up. Yeah. But any traditions? Not that I can bring to mind immediately, no, but just we always talk about the past. We don't bury it. We do bring it up.
And do you think your parents had different traditions when they were growing up, during your childhood, maybe with your family?
Well, I suppose because of just the way life was then. Obviously, food would have been very different, and living on farms. Yes, they would have. I don't suppose they ever had anything fancy. One thing I do know, which may be of interest, is for my father's birthday, which was August the 11th, it was the big treat for him and his sisters to have lemon jelly. Oh. And they always had his birthday tea in the orchard, because being August, I suppose it's generally good weather. And so Up until the last of his sisters died, they would always refer to Dad's birthday as Orchard Day. And even now I say, but you know, can you get the lemon jelly in a shop now? It's very difficult without going to the gelatine and things. But, you know, to buy a packet of lemon jelly is quite difficult. But we sort of, you know, we tell our daughter these things and my cousins do remember that. So, yeah. And another nice little thing we have, and again, this is on Dad's side, although Mum would have had things, but it just seemed, I suppose, that, I don't know why, but when we get our Christmas decorations out, we've got half a dozen or so that were from his childhood. Now, I mean, although I say they were farmers, they were incredibly poor. And looking at the pictures, you know, you've only got to look. I guess they lived very much from hand to mouth. But the farm was partly owned by my great-aunt Caroline, who was a spinster, and she ran the local post office in a room at the farm. And I suppose perhaps without, you know, her own family obligations, she was able to care for her brother, Grandad Hunt's children, as well as Granny. And perhaps they did have a few more treats because Great Aunt was there sharing the home with them. So every year, with huge reverence, I have to say, we get these little glass baubles out. And my dad would have been over 100 now. So, I mean, we know they're getting on a bit, but we just love them.
Fantastic.
Yes. But, so those little things do mean a lot.
What sort of foods do you like to eat now?
Oh, everything and anything.
Yeah.
Just
any particular favourites?
Honestly, Robin, that's so hard. I mean, as I said, both my mum and my dad were really good cooks, and I'm not a master chef. I don't do things very fancy, but I reckon I'm a sort of a good farmhouse cook. We have lots of good traditional food. I have to say our daughter is far more experimental, but I'm learning a lot from her. No, we love anything, really, and fortunately my husband's very tolerant. And our first date, when I invited him over, I was so enthralled, obviously, with him that I even burnt the potatoes. So, I mean, but having said that, we do like a variety of things. I'd say it's mostly traditional, but just as much we love curries or, you know, trying things from other cuisines.
So do you think that's changed since you were growing up?
Oh, my goodness, yes, because, I mean, it was always meat and potatoes and vegetables, wasn't it, and a good old pudding. And I remember Mum was very, because she liked entertaining, she had, and I now still have, a lot of her cookery books. The earliest one goes back to 1947 and is mostly canning and preserving and things like that. She was also very loyal member of the Women's Institute, so she was always she always baked to a very high standard. One thing I do love looking through is her party and entertaining books of, say, like the 60s, and the Marguerite Patton books and things like that, and the way that cakes were iced and things. So I know. When it was if I had a birthday party and friends came, we'd always have lovely cakes, and they always looked. And she did sort of pioneer things in the prawn cocktail era, which my other aunties wouldn't have done, and things like that. And then Dad, because he used to love baking and cooking as well. I remember when he started doing curries and things. So I think. I was quite lucky that although we lived in a small village, we hardly ever ate out anywhere. I don't really remember us really going out for a meal at all. But we had really good food, diverse food, and had fun making it. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So with this project in mind, what does dialect mean to you?
Well, I think when I was younger, I was probably a bit embarrassed by it, really. And even as an adult, I remember my husband and I were at a party, and there were some people there from London, and I don't think he meant to be unkind, but he sort of latched on to my Suffolkiness, and he said, "Oh, I love these old country dialects. You know, it makes me feel really, reminds me of when I used to visit the seaside." And I think I didn't say anything at the time, but I remember feeling a little bit affronted because sometimes. Very wrongly, but sometimes I think people, hopefully not so much now, but back in the day, thought if you had a very pronounced, especially a country sort of accent, that you were also a bit of a country bumpkin. But now I think it's actually a great privilege to have an accent, because certainly with the Suffolk accent, it has become more diluted. I think Norfolk has retained theirs a bit more, perhaps being just a step further away from the London conurbation. But I'm actually quite proud of it now. And although I don't use it very often, I am actually quite pleased if anyone picks it up now. Mm. Yeah.
And do you think you've picked up any words or phrases from the other places that you've lived?
Yes, I'm afraid I have, yes. Apart from, obviously, Gaelic ones, which, I do slip into now and again. Just, obviously, colloquialisms. Instead of saying something's little, I often say it's we now from Scotland.
Yeah.
I don't think I've been in Yorkshire long enough to pick up much, although sometimes I think I probably do say it sometimes, things like instead of mustard I might say mustard, but I don't think I've been here long enough, but I think I do slip into dialect quite easily. And I know if we go back to Suffolk and I'm talking to family and friends who are very Suffolk, I do slip into that very easily again.
Yes, quite easy, isn't it?
But I think having always had to talk for my profession, you know, I mean, you've got to sort of speak quite clearly. So I think I just try and speak more clearly anyway to make myself understood, rather than using too many dialect words.
And do you think you've inherited any words from your relatives, older relatives?
Well, yes, and we still, not that many, but there are certain things we still refer to, like snails. We always refer to them as hobmidods, and wasps as jaspers.
Okay.
Quite
often as jaspers. Yeah, I've heard
Have we heard that? Yeah.
The snails one. Mm-hmm. I hadn't heard that before, mm-hmm. but Hobby I've heard other people mentioning that.
I think that's also possibly also a Norfolk one.
Yes.
And things especially to do with the weather. I mean, we do often say, it's hully cold, and I mean, I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but it's just that how I remember the older generations, what's hully cold? So we often look at each other and go, what's hully cold? Or if there's a very black sky and storm coming, we'd say, oh, it's hully black over Will's mothers. You've probably come across that
yes,
one.
Yes,
yeah.
yes,
yes. Uh-huh, yeah. Yes. So probably just the more common ones, I think. Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks a lot, Mary. So that's the first part of the questionnaire, the interview done. So, have a slurp of tea if you'd like to. I think I will as well. That's very interesting. So the next part is a bit more structured, I suppose. So the first thing I'm going to do is to show you some pictures, and I'll ask you a few questions about them. So the first one is, what do you call this creature?
Well, I'd call it a hedgehog, but I know a lot of my now deceased aunts would have probably called it a hedge pig.
Yeah.
But I would say a hedgehog.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what about this?
That one. Daddy long legs.
Okay.
Yeah, I know it's a crane fly, really, isn't it? But we'd always call it a daddy long legs. Yeah.
And this one?
Oh, an earwig. But in Scotland, that was often an eerie wiggle. An eerie wiggle.
Oh, okay.
Yes, but we'd say an
earwig. So a variant of that.
A variant, yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And what do you call this type of garden weed? Have you come across that?
Yeah, that's goosegrass, isn't it? But sometimes called sticky willies.
Sticky willies.
Now, that might have been a Scottish one as well. Did we get that up there? I think we did. But we would call it goosegrass and go around flinging it at each other. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And this is a drop of
do.
Okay.
do. But I know there is another Suffolk name for that, which I have known, but I would call that do, a do drop.
Okay, because my uncle last week said dag.
Oh, dag, yes, a heavy dag.
That? Yes,
heavy
okay,
dag.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, heavy dag.
I'd never heard that before. Mm-hmm. And this is a bag of?
Well, I'd say sweet, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what would you call one of these?
It's a bread roll. Yes, bread roll. Ah. But I'm getting now, is it a balm now? You see, it's a different Yorkshire friends are saying. Yeah, but...
What do you call these?
Well, I'd say... Oh, no, you've got me now. Because I use scone and scone. I say fruit scones and cheese scones. So I'm really awkward and difficult like that. Because I could say it's a Suffolk rusk, but I don't think it is because it's got the cream.
And how many are there?
Well, I don't know, three.
Not one,
three.
Two, but...
Yeah. Several scones.
Yeah.
Or three scones.
And what's your word for these?
Oh, well, spring onions, but I know they're scallions, really, but I would call them spring onions. Mm. Is there a better Suffolk name that I don't know about?
No, I don't know. And what's going on here?
Wow.
What's this? How's she being carried?
Well, she having a piggyback, is she? Yeah, is she? So it's a job to see who's doing it.
Yes, I know.
A piggyback, I think, yes.
And what do you call this?
A seesaw.
Okay, good. So the next... the next section... Slightly different. These are sentence prompts. So what I want you to do is to complete the sentence by selecting a word that you'd use in a conversation with friends. So basically to fill in the gap, if I cover those
right,
up.
Right, okay. With a friend.
Yeah. So the food was...
Well, just really tasty, really tasty.
Okay,
yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And the next one.
He asked me to fix it and I said, no way. I replied. And I said no.
Yep.
Perhaps we should also add here that our daughter has lived in Liverpool for the last 12 years.
Okay.
So I'm beginning... I mean, I could... I'm having to be a little bit careful that, you know, she hasn't picked up any Scouse, really, but one or two little turns of phrase,
yes.
Which... We might use if we were together, but I wouldn't normally use myself, no.
So the last one is just some questions, and I'll give you a prompt and then you can just say what you feel about it. So what do you call a room in a house for storing food?
Pantry or larder.
If you haven't eaten food for a long time, you're bound to feel...
Hungry. But my dad would have said, oh, no, that's if he'd eaten too much. He'd say, my hoops are tight.
Ah, okay, that's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what words do you use for something to eat?
Food, really. Just have, or a little bite of something. Shall we have a little something? Meaning, we shouldn't really, but shall we just have a little something? Yeah.
And what do you call a coffee you might get from a cafe with lots of milk in it?
Now, I think my answer has changed now. I would have said, years ago, a milky coffee or a frothy coffee, but now it would be more specific now. Is it a latte or a cappuccino? Because we know more. Mm. But in the olden days, it would just been a white coffee,
yeah.
I think.
And what's the dairy product that you spread on toast and sandwiches?
Oh, butter.
Which word or phrase would you use to indicate a temporary break in a game when points can't be scored?
Sorry, I don't really understand that.
So if there's a game being played and there's a break in the game,
oh.
What?
Right, so a break in the match?
I mean, it obviously depends on the game.
Yes.
If you fall over in the playground, your knee might be
grazed.
And if you got covered in dirt in the, at the playground, when you get home, you might need to get in the
bath.
When children are very excited, you might say they're full of
beans.
At the end of a long and tiring day, you'd say you were absolutely.
probably I would say shattered, probably. Mm. That would very much depend on the company
I
was in.
Yes. Which word would you use to mean not attending school?
As a teacher, I'd say absent, but I'd probably just say, just absent, I think, yes. I don't think.
And sometimes when children are being very naughty, their parents tell them that somebody will come and take them away. What do you call this mysterious person?
I suppose the bogeyman, I suppose. Yes. Yeah.
You grow crops and raise animals on a
farm, a small holding,
When you walk in the countryside after heavy rain, your shoes will get covered in
mud.
When driving in icy or wet weather, you must take care because the roads are
very slippery.
Which word do you use as a term of endearment, even with strangers?
I'm not really sure I understand the question. Do you mean writing or
I think in addressing them.
I'd probably I tend to err on the more formal side. Mm. So a term of endearment. I don't know how to answer that one.
No, really. That's okay.
Sorry.
That's all right. I think it probably reflects our Suffolk nature, actually.
Yeah, that a little bit reserved.
Yeah, exactly.
Would we need terms of endearment if we were strangers? Mm. I don't know.
Which word would you use to refer to somebody as very attractive?
She's pretty or good looking, I think.
Mm.
Yes.
And what's your word for spreading rumours?
Depends, either gossip or a bit of tittle-tattle, probably, yes.
Yeah. And a picture not hanging straight is hanging?
Oh, definitely on the her, because from Suffolk.
Yeah.
I might say wonky to someone else, but definitely on the her. Yeah.
What do you call a very small piece of wood that has got into your finger?
A splinter.
And what do you call a person who mends shoes and boots?
A cobbler.
And any other words you'd like to tell us about?
I think in some respects, I think a lot of the Suffolk dialect is sort of a bit of language in that we tend to miss out consonants in the middles of words. Or say like the word photograph, we'd say, oh, it's a photo, or a footer, a footo, footo. Mm. And just sort of generally leave off endings, and of course the vowels, how they, can't think of one just at the moment, but like choral might become coral and things like that. Mm. So And hear, the word to hear, either place or hearing. How we'd say hear, the the diphthongs, isn't it? Diphthong. Here we'd sort of spread out the vowel sound. So I think in a lot of respects we do tend to clip and shorten words just to, which I do believe is a form of, or is it just a little local private code dialect? I don't know.
Good. Well, that's the end of the interview, Mary. So thank you very much indeed for coming here and sharing your life and experiences and your family reminiscences. It's been really interesting. Thank you very much indeed.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.